This is American Dissident Voices. This is a program speaking for Americans who believe in freedom rather than in political correctness, who value quality above equality, and are willing to do whatever must be done to restore America to racial and moral health and her public institutions to sanity and integrity. This is a program speaking for Americans who dissent from the United States government's policies of multiculturalism and enforced diversity and globalism. This program is the voice of America's dissidents who are speaking out to America's patriots and to patriots of our Western civilization around the world in order that we may learn together and work together for a better future for us all.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. There are many strands that make up the knot of tyranny, which increasingly binds the minds of men. But none are more obvious, and none are more odious, than the cords that bind a man who will, in my opinion, one day be regarded as one of the heroes of this age. Mr. Ernst Zundel, late of Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and now of Mannheim Prison in Germany. Mr. Zundel was just shipped in chains to Germany after the most shameful imaginable quasi-legal terrorism and sham proceedings by the governments of the United States and Canada. The Star Chamber has returned to North America. Mr. Zundel's crime is that of publicly doubting what Jews say about World War II. Nothing more. All else is pretext. The missed immigration hearing was the Bush neocon administration's pretext to kidnap him and ship him from his home and hearth and wife into Canada, where he was held in solitary confinement for 2 years without charge and subjected to a secret trial under a judge who once headed the secret police agency, which knowingly put him in mortal danger, probably hoping to kill him on orders of its Jewish masters. So now the Alice in Wonderland ruling has been issued, and the innocent writer and thinker, Ernst Zundel, is in yet another prison, now charged in Germany with doubting the extremely doubtful but legally protected story of the Holocaust. So now the focus shifts to Europe, where awareness of Jewish power is growing, and yet also where free speech is not a right, and doubting the Jewish version of World War II history is a crime.
American Dissident Voices.
To discuss this important event, we have as our guest today Mr. Mark Weber, Director of the Institute for Historical Review. Mr. Weber is not only an historian, but he has served as the Zundel family's American spokesman, giving many media interviews, organizing protests, and speaking events in the cause of freeing this innocent man. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be on again.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of the events, beginning with the judge's ruling in Canada a few days ago?
Well, it's been a dramatic last several weeks. It was on the 24th or 25th, Judge Blaise handed down his long-awaited decision on the accusation that Ernst Zundel is a threat to national security. Now, this is fantastic, really. Ernst Zundel has been held for 2 years in solitary confinement in Canadian detention on the charge that he's a threat to national security. Just about every neutral observer of the scene rejects that as an empty pretext. It's amazing that in the last several days, even a number of journalists on national television have stressed or admitted or acknowledged over and over that this charge is really preposterous. In any case, though, Judge Blaise handed down his ruling and declared Ernst Zundel is a threat to national security. Now, he did so on the basis of evidence that no one can see. It seems to be based entirely on who Ernst Zundel has met with and talked with over the past several years, and he alleges that Ernst Zundel is a a central figure in a sinister network of right-wingers, nationalists, white supremacists, and so forth. But no actual evidence of any wrongdoing or any real threat was cited by the judge. And it only underscored, really, the emptiness of the pretext under which Aaron Sindel has been held. But very shortly after the judge, Blaze, issued this ruling, on, I guess it was Monday, Aaron Sindel was informed last Monday that the first, that he would be deported from Germany. He's a German national, and although he had been living in Canada for more than 40 years, for the last several years until he was incarcerated in Canada, he had been living in Tennessee with his wife. Anyway, on the 2nd of March, Aaron Sindel was packed up, put on an airplane, and sent to Germany. And as we speak, he's now being held in a prison in Mannheim, Germany, and he has been charged with violating that country's strange law that makes it a crime to, quote, deny the Holocaust, that is, to dispute the official version of the fate of Europe's Jews during World War II. And that's where he's held. Now, it's unclear next what will happen and how, when there will be a trial and so forth. Now, the one of the amazing facets of this whole thing is that before he was deported from the United States 2 years ago, Aaron Sindel had been living rather quietly in Tennessee with his wife, Ingrid Rimland.
Yes.
He's now become far better known, and the whole case much better known, as a result of his arrest in the United States, his deportation to Canada first and now to Germany. The case has become now an international affair. And Aaron Sindel and his ordeal is now much better known than ever it was before he was taken away in February 2003.
Indeed. Now, how is Mrs. Sindel, Ingrid Sindel, taking this?
Well, I spoke with her just the other day. It's a big blow, of course. She's afraid she'll never see her husband again. As it happens, on the 3rd of February, Ingrid Rimland and I spoke at a meeting here in Southern California organized by the IHR. And this is the first address that Ingrid had given to any audience about her husband's ordeal, about the background of the whole thing, since he was taken away from her in February of 2003. She talked about how right after he was arrested, it was a really great blow, and she was very subdued, and it was very difficult. But then, of course, life picks up, and a new pattern emerges, and she has, with great fortitude, borne this tremendous burden that has fallen on her shoulders, organizing this campaign for his release during the past couple of years. And when I spoke to her again just the other day, of course, she was very subdued. It's a terrible blow. And as I said, she's afraid that her husband's been taken away from her and she'll never see him again. She runs the risk, of course, even visiting him in Germany, that she might be arrested herself and put in prison, because the laws in Germany are very bizarre in this respect.
What a sad, sad situation for a married couple to be in.
Well, it's a very, very sad situation. You know, there's a number of aspects of this whole case that are really remarkable. Aaron Sindel was arrested and taken away in Tennessee on the pretext that he had missed a immigration hearing. He was held in Canada for 2 years in solitary confinement on the empty pretext that he's a threat to national security. And now he's being held in Germany on the charge that he denies the Holocaust. In all three cases, the charges are either empty or they are political in nature or both. But no matter what the character of the individual circumstances in each case, it points up the tremendous symbolic role that Aaron Sindel has taken on. But it's important to stress that Aaron Sindel has been targeted in this way, not because of anything he's really done. I mean, the charge that he's a threat to national security is really preposterous on its face, as even the leading newspaper in Canada, the Globe and Mail, has on two occasions editorially affirmed. What's significant, though, is that Ernst Sundel fought a tremendous battle in the courts in the 1980s over the Holocaust issue, and in fact, enormously publicized the entire Holocaust revisionist case of skepticism about the official Holocaust story. And I can attest personally, and I've seen this myself, that the Canadian Jewish groups, American Jewish groups, absolutely hate this man and are determined to put him away and shut him up in any way they can.
Yes, when you strip away all the legal pretexts and the sham moralizing, it's really just he's there because of Jewish vengeance.
A popular public affairs program in Canada called the Michael Corrin Show has dealt three or four times now in the last few weeks with the Sundel case. And there is unanimous agreement, even by the host of the show who's Jewish, and by the others who've been on the show, that Ernst Sundel is not a threat to national security. But one guest in particular was emphatic in saying he's in prison because Jewish groups want him in prison. And this is a point that very few people are willing to say openly, but which must be said. If Ernst Sundel is not really a threat to national security, then an immense injustice has been done to this man. He's been held for 2 years then unjustly. And he's a victim. He's not a perpetrator. He's a victim of injustice. And the question arises then, who are the perpetrators and how can they be held accountable for the injustice against him and against others like him?
Indeed, we must not forget that. Is anyone able to speak with Ernst Sundel now?
Well, I don't know now what the situation is, how free he's able to speak. When he was in solitary confinement in Canada, he was permitted to collect telephone calls out as long as the authorities were notified in advance to whom he was calling. As your listeners may know from previous broadcasts, he was held under draconian conditions. The light was never turned off in his cell. He was not permitted to have even a pen. He had to write with pencils. He was not allowed to have a desk. Very draconian. I don't know now what the situation is, but it's hard to imagine that the circumstances that he's being held under in Germany or will be held under will be any worse than they were in Canada. Indeed, at least he has the right now to confront his evidence, whatever it is, and to deal with it in a kind of normal way. When somebody is held in Canada or in other countries under the so-called national security pretext, all the normal rules are thrown out the window. And as I mentioned in Sundel's case in Canada, he was not permitted to even confront or refute or respond to the evidence supposedly that was presented against him.
So this is not going to be a secret trial as the one in Canada was.
Right. One of the remarkable aspects of the case now in Germany is that Ernst Sundel has been charged with Holocaust denial because of what's posted on the so-called Sundel site, the Sundel site website. It's Sundelsite.org. It's linked to our site, the IHR, Institute for Historical Review site. The Sundel site contains quite a lot of material that is called Holocaust denial. But it's important to remember a couple of things. First, the website is not, despite the name, is not really Ernst Sundel's website. I mean, it's not just a quibble, but his wife runs the website. His wife controls the website. Ernst Sundel does not have, not only not does have access to it, he doesn't even know the password. But the most obvious evidence that the site is not run by Ernst Sundel is the fact that it's been running for 2 years while he's been in solitary confinement in Canada. Second, the website is based not in Germany or in Canada even, but in the United States. And to punish a person for what's posted on a website in another country where that material is legal opens up a very dangerous door for abuse. Let's consider for a moment the implications of that if that becomes a general principle. It could mean, for example, that a Chinese person living in the United States who posts something on an American website denouncing communist rule in China could be punished and even extradited, I suppose, from the United States to China and punished there for doing something that's quite legal in this country but illegal in China. As everyone knows, there are laws all around the world that we in America don't agree with. In fact, there are laws in America that Americans 50 years ago wouldn't have agreed with. But to make a statement on a website in a country where it's legal and then have the person punished in yet another country is a very dangerous thing indeed.
There are some of your writings up on the Zindel site. I know there are some of mine as well. And haven't actually some of your writings been the subject of legal proceedings?
Right. Well, some of the some essays that I have written, which are posted on the IHR website, are also posted on the Zindel site. And they've been, under German law, indexed. That means they're not exactly banned, but there are certain restrictions on them. They're put in a class, in a category in Germany similar to the category that pornography is. But Jewish groups in Canada tried, after they were unsuccessful in getting Zindel during the 1980s, they tried to shut him up and punish him for what appeared on the Zindel site during the 1990s. And this was before a semi-court body called the Human Rights Tribunal. And on two occasions, I testified before this tribunal on behalf of Ernst Zindel. And part of the reason I testified was, as you mentioned, that some of the writings that were objected to were written by me. But the incredible thing is that these writings, because of the court case that Ernst Zindel had fought in the 1980s, were legal in printed form in Canada and are now legal in printed form in Canada, but Jewish organizations were trying to punish or shut up Ernst Zindel for these same writings appearing in internet, on online form, on the Zindel site, which in fact is run by his wife and not by him and is based in the United States.
It sounds like the Court of the Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland.
You know, it's I can say this from the on the 4th of February, we held a demonstration outside the Canadian consulate in downtown Los Angeles, and there was a maybe 50 Los Angeles policemen in the middle of the street separating our demonstration from a very raucous demonstration by the Jewish Defense League on the other side of the street. I can say that one of the most gratifying aspects of that demonstration was the support we got from people who represent a whole range of political views. Ernst Zindel has become a symbol, a lightning rod, a rallying point for people concerned about the issue of freedom of speech. And it's very gratifying to see the kind of support that he's gotten on this matter. And by the same token, it really points up the hypocrisy of many of these so-called defenders of free speech that they have not supported Ernst Zindel in this because they don't want to be associated with a person who holds these views on the Second World War and so forth. But there has been a wide range of and growing, and interestingly enough, even growing support for Ernst Zindel the longer he was held. The demonstration we held on the 4th of February was coordinated with demonstrations in other American cities on that same date or the next day, and also in Tokyo, in Stockholm, and in Canada as well. And I just received a report that today in Mannheim, Germany, there was about 40, 50 people demonstrating and distributing leaflets in downtown Mannheim supporting Ernst Zindel there. Now, it's hard to say yet what's going to happen, but there's every prospect that the Zindel case will become an important case in Germany as well.
Excellent. I am glad to hear that. Who has failed us in this regard? Who has failed us in standing up for Ernst Zindel's freedom of speech? How about Amnesty International?
Right. On just the immediate issue, this is a point I even made at the talk in, a few weeks ago. The behavior of the Amnesty International, which is probably the most prestigious international organization for political prisoners and so, has taken the view that those people who are incarcerated or punished for free speech that is so-called hateful, those people don't deserve their support. And Amnesty International has really—it's shown its hypocrisy. the limitations of its adherence to its own principles in the Zindel case. But there's more than that. It's outrageous that the American media has failed to publicize the Zindel case or to denounce the treatment of Zindel fervently and in any really meaningful way in the United States or in other countries. I mean, it's really part of a larger problem. In a number of European countries, France, Germany, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and so forth, it's a crime to dispute the official version of World War II history about the Holocaust. My point is that it's a real failure that there's not been more outrage about the very existence of these laws.
Yeah.
This is the only chapter of history that receives this kind of judicial protection. Or to put it another way, it's a form of selective justice. And selective justice is not justice, it's a form of injustice. And these laws exist because Jewish groups have agitated and promoted and pushed for these laws, because for Jewish groups, the Holocaust story is a very, very important pillar of their psychological, media, and cultural role in our society. And anyone who pays even the slightest attention realizes the extent to which the Holocaust has the kind of iconic status it does in our society.
Well, the Jewish power structure has been able to get these laws enacted in many European countries, whereas they do not have similar laws, at least yet, in the United States. However, it's sort of ironic that in Europe there seems to be a much greater awareness of Jewish power and the toxic nature of Jewish power than there is in the United States. Do you think this will be a factor in how the Zindel case is seen in Europe?
Well, I'm not as close as I'd like to be to the situation in Europe, but there does seem to be a shift in Europe about a lot of this. It's been 60 years now since the end of World War II in Europe, and all of these kinds of laws and this kind of special emphasis on Jewish suffering, almost to the exclusion or certainly overshadowing the suffering of other people, is pretty tiring to millions and millions of people, not only in Europe but around the world. But it's put up with by a lot of people, and who don't really care what the implications are and so forth. But I think it's harder and harder for a state, Germany or other states, to justify putting people in jail for expressing a dissident view about this one chapter of history, and not punishing people for similar dissident views on other subjects. It's a violation of the proclaimed ideals of democracy that these countries all claim to support.
Are these offenses under which Ernst Zindel is now charged in Germany bailable offenses? I would think that they would be.
In principle, yes, but Ernst Zindel is a special case, and is for several reasons, not only because of his prominence and so forth, but also because he has no real residence in Germany. He hasn't lived in Germany for, 40, 45 years. And so normally bail is given when a person has a normal residence in a place. And it's fairly easy for the state prosecutor to argue that he shouldn't be given bail on the basis that there's a likelihood he'd leave the country. Indeed, he wants to leave the country. He doesn't want to be there. He was forced to be there. But normally he might be given bail, but in this particular situation, it's hard to see. It's also hard to see how the state is going to, looking ludicrous, try to enforce the law in this particular case, given that, as I mentioned, that he hasn't even been in the United States. He's been in solitary confinement for 2 years and can't control the website that's supposedly the center of the offense.
You are listening to American Dissident Voices, brought to you by National Vanguard Books. Be sure to be with us when we continue this important broadcast, Zindel's Persecution by Order of the Jews, next week on American Dissident Voices.
You've heard of the NAACP, the Jewish Anti-Defamation League, the African American Planning Commission, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, the Japanese American Citizens League, National Congress of American Indians, National Council of Negro Women, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute, Native American Rights Fund, National Puerto Rican Coalition, National Urban League, Organization of Chinese Americans, Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Anything missing here? Did you notice white America has been totally left out? Well, not anymore. And the future is bright. And just in time, visit nationalvanguard.org. There's a need for your assistance. The time is right to unite. White Americans, spend some time with us. See how bright our future will be. nationalvanguard.org.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. You may purchase a high-fidelity audio recording of this program or any earlier program for $12.95 postpaid. In ordering program tapes, be sure to mention the date and the subject of the program and the call letters of this radio station. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Please write that address down now, because you may not hear this program again on this station. The forces of political correctness do not believe in free speech, and they do not like this program. Our address again is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Visit us on the internet at www.natvan.com. That's spelled NATVAN.com. Or www.natall.com. That's spelled NATALL.com. These American Dissident Voices programs are sponsored by donations from listeners like yourself. Please send a donation today to help us keep these programs on the air. This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.